Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another special interview episode from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And this is being recorded on the evening of April the 28th. And on the line with me, from just a mere 60 miles away from where I am here in Portland, Oregon, is Andrew Hoffman of EugenicsWars.com. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks so much for having me, James. I enjoy your show.
And is that, I mean, did we basically make friends on Facebook?
Yeah, that was, I actually first heard your show while I was over in Korea listening to the Corbett Report. And he was talking about you, and that's how I found Media Monarchy.
See, and I think that it's that kind of thing that speaks to, you know, just kind of how amazing it is. Bouncing all around the world, that you had to go to Korea to hear James Corbett, who I do a show with, to find out that I'm 60 miles away from you.
Yeah, that was awesome that someone was that close to my hometown was doing this stuff. That was great. And it was funny, right when I got back into town in last December, and I was kind of wondering if there was anyone around, you know, into this stuff. And I go on InfoWars, and there is a video posted by, and the tag on it was Hood River Truth, and they were confronting one of the senators from Oregon. And so I ended up meeting up with a few people here that are into this stuff, and meeting and fighting wind turbines and all sorts of stuff. So it was a good time.
Well, and that's definitely something as far as the wind and some of the maybe more Pacific Northwest oriented things that we can maybe hit towards the end. But why we're on the line today and something we want to discuss is actually what showed up in my new Media Monarchy P.O. box a couple of weeks ago. And that is your new book, The New World Order and the Eugenics Wars, A Christian Perspective. So maybe before we dive into the book and basically what we're facing and maybe what can be done, I suppose, let's actually give folks, because as we talked briefly before we started rolling here, that this is the first time we've spoken. So for not only the listeners, but for myself, can you give folks just a bit of your background?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up here in Hood River, born and raised. And then after high school, I was tired of the rain, so I moved to Phoenix, went to college down there, taught high school English, of all things, down there for a few years. And then I ended up going over to Korea and teaching English over there for about 15 months. And that was really the time, you know, I'd kind of woken up to stuff before that, but I had the time then to, you know, dig in and be reading news articles for 6 hours a day and hiking around on the trails around the city, listening to different podcasts and things. So that was kind of my education in it. And partway through that time, I was talking to someone whose YouTube videos people might be familiar with. He has the Nowhere to Run 1984 channel, a guy named Chris White. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to him about maybe doing a book with some of his stuff. So he said, yeah, write up an outline. I did that, and he said, oh, you know this stuff well enough already, just write it. So that's what kind of kicked it off. And yeah, my goal with the book was to put together kind of a basic overview, and it's a book that should interest people who are, you know, listeners to your show and already into this stuff, but also it's a book to give people who are either just waking up or you're trying to wake them up. So that was kind of my goal with the book. So.
Well, and a lot of folks come to these areas, or this stuff, as you put it, in this world of what people would derisively call conspiracy theory, but it's essentially what we've seen only growing and accelerating by the moment. Of course, throughout the years and throughout the decades, there are massive seminal events that kind of kick things into higher gear. Now, whether that's JFK or 9/11 or certain events, a lot of these things move along in the incrementalism, and it slowly builds up all around us. I think whether you're Christian or agnostic or atheist or anything, I think we would all agree on the fact that things do seem to be speeding up now in what we've seen going on.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think I've heard you talk about how 9/11 was kind of a meaningful turning point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, but it was kind of a delayed thing. At first, I was totally asleep to it. I wasn't into politics at all. I kind of thought Democrats and Republicans were the same. You know, I kind of had that figured out. But, I had no idea that reality could be that much different than what I was being shown on TV. And I actually kind of stumbled into some books by David Ray Griffin on 9/11, and that's what kind of started me down the rabbit trail. So.
You know, and actually even just trying to put together some thoughts or things to hit in this talk, David Ray Griffin didn't come to me. And as soon as you said, I was like, oh, of course. David Ray Griffin, of course, is not only one of the most, you know, prominent 9/11 scholars and writers.
Right.
He is, of course, of Christian man. And that has never really been a hindrance in his word getting out. I think if anything, it has almost given him more of a voice because he doesn't seem like some crazy internet blogger.
Well, and I think, kind of reading up a little bit on him, he kind of ran into the whole neocon pseudo-Christian thing while he was, I think, in seminary or back in school, and, you know, was kind of repelled by it then. And then I think that kind of prepared him to look into 9/11. He saw the kind of the evil that was there. And I think that is, you know, in America, there's kind of all different versions of things floating around calling themselves Christianity. And, in my opinion, I don't know how you get from New Testament Christianity to saying, oh, we need to bomb the Middle East and do this and do that and take over the world. I don't know how those ideas can live together in the same mind, but apparently they do.
Well, and again, something we only briefly touched on when we were talking before we started to record, that I grew up in a Southern Baptist church in Fayetteville, West Virginia. I went to the Emmanuel Baptist Church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night till I was probably 15 years old. And at one point, Dad was the choir director. Mom, to this day, still works in the treasury. And so I grew up in the church and was, you know, it wasn't a strict, you know, kind of upbringing by any stretch. You know, there's still TV and got to eat junk food and could wear, you know, there weren't dress codes and things like that. But I did go to a Christian school for a few years when I was very young. I think ultimately money is what put me back in public school. But I wasn't allowed to, you know, I wasn't allowed to buy music or go to movies or any of that kind of stuff. And like I said, you know, could watch TV, but it was, you know, it was basically ABC, you know, the big three and,
right,
and four,
right,
at that point, again, in the mid 80s. Yep. And I remember, and this is the thing that's always kind of stuck with me, I remember the seminars and the speakers and the missionaries that came to the church that talked about the evils and the occult, you know, nature and symbolism of rock music and the media. And that, of course, always kind of stuck with me. And I guess sure my mom doesn't get a kick out of it, but I've always found it ironic that, you know, of course, the thing that you kept me away from is the thing that as soon as I was, you know, out of the church and pretty much a teenager and a young adult, an adult, that's pretty much been what I've done. I've done radio for the last, you know, 15 years, I think. 15 years, is that possible?
Well, at least you didn't go into television, you know.
No. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I see some of those things that I heard, but, you know, back in church, you know, playing, you know, the backwards masking and
right,
a lot of that
right,
kind of stuff. So I guess having a background in some of that, and I'm not saying that's all that we did. Of course, I also remember a lot of, you know, what folks would refer to as like the fire and brimstone. Now, it wasn't the pulpit pounding, you know, screaming and yelling, but it seemed like, you know, there was a lot of, again, sort of end times discussions. Again, this being the 80s and this being, you know, the Russians, the Soviet Union. It was, you know, they were going to get us. And, you know, I grew up with a lot of, you know, Jerry Falwell and Jack Van Impe. I actually met Jerry Falwell. I can tell you that story one of these days. But having the background in Christianity and in the church helps me see some of the things that are playing out and going on in the world right now, whereas other friends and family and folks who don't have any kind of Christian background don't have that extra perspective on what we see basically building, that we would all agree on is the formation of some sort of new world order.
Right.
So
some sort of world government.
Yeah. And I guess I want to get from your perspective, you know, from the Christian perspective, like even the title of the book says, what we basically see going on right now for folks who maybe this is very new to them.
Sure. And kind of my goal with the book is, I think it is good for kind of conspiracy people if they want to see these things from a Christian perspective and see that there's other points of view than the neocon version there. And it's also, you know, I'm kind of ashamed to a certain extent of the church for not being anti-New World Order. I mean, this stuff, you know, the whole eugenics thing and everything is just completely against the teachings that are in the Bible. And also the other thing that I think was key in the history of Christianity was the assimilation of political power and the merging of political power with the church. And I think that true Christianity cannot coexist with political power structure. And what I mean by that is that you can't have a Christian nation. You can't have a Christian government, something that is truly Christian and forcing its will on other people. It just doesn't work. And I think what Constantine did was a very savvy political move, is instead of trying to kill off all the Christians, and he had Christians refusing to serve in the military and they wouldn't go fight his wars. So what he did is he pretended to become a Christian, made himself the head of the religion, just like he was head of the pagan religion. And he basically corrupted Christianity by merging it with the state. And I think that is what produced the horrors of the Middle Ages and the Inquisition and everything else, was this fake version of Christianity where it was mixed with state power and the agenda of men who were seeking power. And I think we see that same thing in America today with kind of the neocon version of state Christianity.
And that, you know, we're always discovering that our, you know, supposedly conservative or, you know, relatively so Christian leaders are always turning up if they're not, you know, having affairs or being caught, you know, in just sort of the vice kind of angles of things.
Right.
They're getting exposed as being involved in far, far worse, whether that's societies with occult rituals and other, you know, far worse, you know, non-consensual sex crimes and worse, that we are all, again, we're kind of sold this fault that George Bush was a good Christian man.
Right.
And
right.
And what you said again, that, and this is something that, you know, a conversation I think I've tried to have, you know, with my parents for the last several years, as I've, you know, post 9/11, come to this, you know, through now what 9 years of you know, research and reading and all, you know, and all that entails, that it's a shame that the church isn't doing more. That, in a way, a lot of them seem to have the idea that, you know, well, things are getting bad, things are getting worse. Maybe that just means Christ's second coming is that much closer, so we're living in the end time, so I don't have to do anything. And, right. And you know, hallelujah, so it's almost the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the shame, you know, of most of the, if not pretty much all, of the mainline churches.
Right, and it's kind of gone in a couple directions. There's that, which is kind of the, unfortunately, you know, I would call myself an evangelical, and that's kind of the evangelical position in some circles. And then there's the other where you kind of took, you know, they don't really take the Bible that seriously and just kind of say, oh, we'll just, you know, try to do good things. And there's kind of the social aspects of Christianity, but not much real belief in the Bible or the person of Christ. And I think it is sad. And what you're talking about as far as the eschatology goes, the idea of end times, this has been going on throughout the history of the church. And to a certain extent, I think it's fine. You know, I think, you know, Jesus told his followers to watch for his return. Where it becomes a problem is exactly when what you're talking about, when it is, oh, things are getting bad, so I'm just going to kick back and wait for the rapture. And there are a bunch of different teachings on the rapture.
Well, and that's actually what I was going to say. Let's even kind of break it down more simply for folks.
Sure.
Of just kind of, if you can give the, and I'm probably rusty myself, I was having to look up earlier, and, you know, when I started to get to dispensationalism and post-millennial and all those things, that can we break that down in a simple form for folks?
Sure, I will attempt to. There's kind of when you hear millennialism, okay, millennialism refers to the 1,000-year reign of Christ, which is in the Bible, but there's different teachings. Some say that it already happened, and they try to match it up with certain dates of the Catholic Church. Some people say, but most of kind of modern American Christianity says it has not yet happened, and it will happen when Christ returns. And then you get into when will Christ return, and the teaching of the rapture, which is, I think, from the Greek word harpazo, which just means caught up into the air. And in the Bible, when it says the air or the heavens, it's talking about the area kind of right around the earth, and that's kind of the spiritual realm. There's the second heaven, which is kind of the, you know, angels and demons realm, and then the third heaven is a realm above that where God is, according to Christianity. And so the idea of the rapture is that you're, you know, transformed from earthly into kind of the angelic realm, and the different teachings on it, they all have to do with the event called the 7-year tribulation, which is prophesied in lots of books of the Bible, including Old Testament books like Daniel, and then New Testament books like Revelation. And some people believe pre-trib rapture, which is you are raptured out of here before any of the bad stuff happens, and those are the people who are usually saying, hey, you know, let's go buy a Left Behind series book and kick back and enjoy, wait for the day when we're out of here. Then there is mid-trib, which is the 3.5 years into it. Then there's post-trib, and then there's kind of variations of it. And there's one position, which personally I think is the strongest, which is called the pre-wrath position. And the idea is that while basically the systems of the earth, Satan, who is called the prince and power of the air, you know, the prince of this world, while he's in control, Christians are basically going to get wiped out for a while. And then the things, you know, are going to get really bad. But the rapture will be at the point in history where God kind of says, okay, things have gone far enough, and then God's judgment comes on the earth. And so the idea of that position is, you know, God would not subject people who have trusted in him, who believe on the Lord Jesus Christ to that particular judgment. So that position. The people, you might hear those terms thrown around. And just a note on the, and I think there's decent arguments for all of them. But again, when I see books, supposedly Christian books, like The Purpose Driven Life or, the Left Behind series, if they're selling millions and millions of copies in America today, you can be pretty sure that what they're talking is not, what I would consider to be, kind of legitimate Christianity. There's mm-hmm. some other agenda pushing those things out there.
Or that it's just gotten so corporate and milquetoast that it's kind of lost whatever edge and point it may have even begun.
Right.
With.
Right. And if it's not offending mass numbers of people, it's probably not, biblical Christianity, because if you read the New Testament Gospels, every time Jesus talked, somebody got offended. He was not walking around as a rock star very much. He'd feed some people or do some miracles, and everybody would be following them, and then he'd say something that completely upset the social and religious order, and he'd have people wanting to kill him. That was kind of how things went there. So.
And to go back to the tribulation period, the 7-year period.
Right.
This is something that, and again, I'll kind of mention it and you can kind of try and flesh it out for me, that okay. It's looked upon as basically being there's some sort of pact or some sort of covenant or agreement. And again, we're talking about, Bible prophecy, that there will be the 7-year agreement and that halfway through the agreement is broken. Now, that's been looked at, hasn't it, to be anything, between things to do with, Israel or land or
right.
even... So, actually, yeah, I mean, can you flesh that out more?
The big event that people are looking for people that are into this thing, they're looking for the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem.
Okay.
Because they feel like that would be a big fulfillment of prophecy. Lots of people consider, the reinstatement of Israel as a nation in 1947 as a key fulfillment of prophecy, because, for close to 2,000 years, Israel wasn't even a nation. So people said, oh, you can't take the Bible literally because Israel isn't even a nation anymore. None of this stuff makes sense about the... eschatology. So that was a big event. People, for the events in Revelation to literally come to pass, the third temple would have to be rebuilt.
And that's something that, you may have heard me mention on the podcast, that for folks who don't maybe follow any kind of, religious prophecy, that I've told folks, like, hey, when you hear that the Dome of the Rock blew up, get your stuff packed, because it's probably on from that point on.
Yeah.
Can you tell, because that basically the Dome of the Rock right now is, it's essentially that Muslims are on land that the Israelis want back. Is that correct?
Right. And it's amazing how prized, that little patch of real mm-hmm. estate is all over the world. And because it's a holy site in Islam as well as Judaism, and by extension, to a certain extent, for Christianity, for those that take this Bible prophecy thing. But I think my personal take on it, I believe the Bible. I believe those things will happen. However, I also think that there is an agenda out there by different people to make it look like these things are happening, and. For instance, the Revelations also talks about a world government. But people seem to think that day one, if there's a world government of any sort, that's it. That's the tribulation, rapture, everything. And that's not, in my opinion, really in the Bible. I think there would be nothing contrary to Scripture if we lived in a, slave grid world government for 100 years. So I think that it's kind of a short-sighted thing to say, oh, you know, once that happens, everything, you know, God's going to come back and solve everything anyway, so we're not responsible. We're not responsible for, you know, for talking to people or working to stop it or anything else. So
and to add another character to this as we're kind of trying to set the kind of stage for folks so they can, you know, see the players and the events and the things, we also have what's known as the Antichrist. So there's an article just a few weeks ago that I posted on Media Monarchy from News Junkie Post, "So Many Antichrists, So Little Time," and I'll just read from it quickly. "Amid the current scandal involving Pope Benedict, speculation has increased that perhaps Christ's very own vicar on earth is none other than the great deceiver, the Antichrist, the harbinger of the end times, the deceiver who hides behind a facade of goodness. Ratzinger is a past member of the Hitler Youth and current pederast enabler, cloaked in his holy vestments, holding the faith of billions in the palm of his hands. Many seem to think that the only way to see him clearly is through the nebulous lens of biblical prophecy. Many evangelicals believe that the Antichrist or beast is a political leader that will carry a message of hope for the people of the world. Many of those same evangelicals believe that there are in fact more than one Antichrist working in concert to usher in the end times. The first would be a political leader, followed by a religious leader who gives credibility to the first. The second beast of the Book of Revelations would then encourage the masses to first accept, then trust, and finally worship the first beast." Would this come into play, you know, during or after a tribulation period, or would this be the lead up?
Right, that would be, the Antichrist is on the scene during the tribulation period. He's the one who makes the peace agreement, 7-year peace agreement that's been broken. And I think a couple of friends of mine, Chris White and his friend Frank Lordy, mm-hmm. they've been conspiracy buffs for a long time, and kind of their take on it is that they think there will be at least one fake Antichrist that people will think is the Antichrist, because everybody knows the Antichrist has got to come first. You know, even people who aren't Christians know about the Antichrist. It's something that's in our culture.
Mm-hmm. And in pop culture.
Right. So it's, and, you know, if you take the Bible seriously and it says that nearly everyone will be deceived, even Christians, it says, will be deceived if that were possible. So if people are saying, hey, so-and-so is the Antichrist, he's not the Antichrist, because the real Antichrist will come along on the scene afterwards, after whoever people think is the Antichrist, or, you know, some terrible event, and will seem like a return of Jesus, or close to that. And from the messages that are out there, there seems to be this thing of, he'll be Jesus, and he'll also be the coming of Buddha and the fulfillment of Islamic eschatology. So there'll be the true Antichrist will kind of seem to fulfill all of those things together. And we always use the translation Antichrist, but kind of a better translation would be pseudo Christ. So it's not someone you see as a bad guy right away. You know, it's not a dictator person. It's not an Adolf Hitler type. It's more of someone who actually seems to solve some problems and solves them in a supernatural way. And because of our kind of Western culture, and I think this is changing to a certain extent, but people, anything spiritual they think must be good, because we're in kind of a materialistic culture. So any spiritual experience, people think, oh, that must be real, that must be good. When from, you know, my point of view, looking at it through a biblical lens, lots of spirituality is not good. Lots of spirituality is deception, just like lots of, you know, experiences in the physical world are not good. So.
Well, and I think it's really interesting that you bring up that, you know, a deity that could be sort of, you know, all things to all religions.
Right.
And you mentioned Frank and Chris, and they do the Frank and Chris show, and Chris White does Nowhere to Run, and Frank Lordy does RevelationsMedia.com. I've actually been trying to get Frank Lordy to come on the show ever since I saw his video about Project Bluebeam. And some of those things you just mentioned are all kind of falling in line with this. So, again, to kind of lay it out simply for folks, there's this idea of something called Project Bluebeam that would either be a sort of fake alien invasion, or it could also be some possible, religious event. I don't believe it would be a kind of fake rapture event, because I don't know how you would kind of fake, I guess, things can be done, but I don't see how you would make people disappear. I see it more as some sort of massive event in the sky that everybody sees.
Right.
And I'm going to include, a lot of documentation in the show notes for this, because I've got a pretty massive post on Project Bluebeam that goes into TV fakery, holographic projections, and audio spotlights. Basically, the technology is completely there to beam sound into someone's head and to beam basically holograms in the sky that could put, Jesus over the Western world, or put Buddha, or put Maitreya, or put Muhammad, all things to all religions. What's your take on this sort of Project Bluebeam fake rapture, fake PSYOP event?
Right, and I think I tend to agree with you that I think kind of the fake alien thing would be a little more likely.
And it only seems to be more so by the days, with the news that comes out.
There is so much programming. People always say, we want official disclosure. And CNN's reporting about aliens all the time. Larry King is on there looking at some Homeland Security blimp and saying, that looks like an alien spacecraft, And it's like supposedly the secret thing, but... And it's everywhere.
It's really, and again, to lay it out for folks, as we're talking here on April 28th, 2010, just in the last day or so, one of the bigger stories is that Professor Stephen Hawking has essentially warned extraterrestrials are almost certain to exist, but if we encounter them, chances are we're screwed. Quote, if aliens visit us, the outcome would be much as when Columbus landed in America, which didn't turn out well for the Native Americans, end quote. And we know, several months ago, the Vatican has come out and said that it basically, it's okay to believe in aliens, or something, right, something right. to the sort. And then and that's the thing. There was a NASA conference today about extraterrestrial life. Other articles about ice on asteroids suggests Earth's water came from space. This is all the stuff that maybe you want to start cyberspacewar.com. But and because there's a programming there is an agenda there on some kind of space event.
Right. Well, you want my take on that?
Please.
My personal view on aliens is that because there's a couple ways to look at it. They claim to be from the Pleiades or things. Well. That part makes no sense. Why would they come millions of light years or whatever and travel here and then only appear to a few people and kind of teach, oh, by the way, Jesus wasn't really the Christ. They always tend to teach what's kind of a New Age philosophy, which seems strange for beings coming from a distant planet. But what they are very similar to, and so there's one angle, you can kind of dismiss the coming from a distant planet hypothesis, but you have millions of people who have had abduction experiences or, they sleep paralysis experiences where they wake up and they can't move and they either see or sense kind of a dark presence in the room. And for me, it is absolutely ridiculous and arrogant to say, oh, all those people are making it up. All those people are lying or hallucinating, when we have these commonalities of experiences. You know, why would someone lie about being abducted by aliens? So everyone thinks they're crazy.
Uh-huh. It's not, yeah, it doesn't exactly make me be like, oh, you're awesome. You're really cool. It's like, yeah, you're a nut.
There's much better ways to get attention there. But what does kind of coincide with it, if you look at the people's experiences with quote-unquote aliens, they are very similar to demonic possession as it's been, you know, recorded throughout history, or kind of different civilizations had different creatures that they, you know, described interacting with. And my take on it is that these are the same creatures, whether you call them demons or fallen angels, the angels that refused to follow God, that rebelled against God and went with Lucifer. And they are, you know, these creatures that are thousands and thousands of years old, pretty darn smart, and can, you know, communicate with people and tell them things and show them things. And yet people, when they interact with them, usually at least the first experience is very dark. You know, it's not a fun thing. But there's always kind of promises of spiritual revelation and things, and oh, you can figure things out and you can become God. And it's the same, what are, in my opinion, lies, kind of repeated over and over, just in different disguises. I tend to think that aliens are really kind of a spiritual, demonic thing. And there's also the meme being pressed through the media and through our society that if aliens exist, Christianity is false. And really those two mm-hmm. things kind of have very little to do with each other, but that's, you know, in the opening scene of the TV show V, what happens? The alien craft comes down, everything's vibrating, and the big cross in the church tumbles down and shatters, right?
Is that so in the new one?
I think it was in the first episode.
Okay, because I haven't. I've been downloading the new, you know, 2010 version of the, but I haven't actually watched any of them yet.
I haven't seen the new ones either. But that was kind of the initial episode of the show. Was kind of that idea: aliens show up, and oh, Christianity is shattered. There. And I think it's what I would encourage, kind of quote unquote, conspiracy people out there, to know that the media is lying to them. If they are conditioning this and putting this message out there, why are they putting it out there? You know, why is it such a big deal that, hey, if aliens are real, Christianity is proven wrong? And also the other thing, it's amazing how so many religions can all kind of fit together. And in my opinion, it's because most religions are people having to do certain things, you know, whether it's rituals or certain behaviors, in order to be accepted by God. So kind of you can, to a certain extent, lump lots of religions together, including some versions of what calls itself Christianity, together with that. But Christianity is the idea of you can't save yourself. You have to, you know, kind of give up on your own merits in it and ask Christ to save you and transform you. And I think that is why it's so, Christianity is so offensive in lots of ways, because as human beings, man, we want to control things ourselves, and people hate to admit they've been deceived. They hate to admit that they can't, to some extent, control their own destiny, or they don't have everything under control themselves. So.
And I don't think you have to be a Christian or even a student of eschatology, which again, folks, as we said, eschatology is the study of end times. You don't have to be necessarily a student or a Christian or involved in any of this to look at, again, at some of the things that are going on and know that it's not right and it's not good for the people. So, just some of the things, and again, in preparation for this, I just wanted to kind of bring up on the site some of the things I'd hit in the past and, you know, stories just from the last several months of Virginia legislature bans microchip implants as a mark of the beast. And mm-hmm. there's similar stories. West Virginia offers licenses for those who fear the beast. Farmer C Mark of the Beast and RFID livestock tags, and teacher claims fingerprinting is Mark of the Beast. So again, we neglected that because we discussed Antichrist and then a sort of Mark of the Beast. That's also referred to as a beast system. Now that has gone from everything to being a literal, you know, barcode on your forehead to other folks saying, man, the beast system's already in place. And it's the thing that we're all communicating on that knows everything about us.
Yeah, that's interesting because Revelation says that there, you'll have a mark on your hand and on your forehead, and that without that mark you can't buy or sell. And also that if you have that mark, you no longer have the opportunity to be saved. You're too far gone. And what I think, if we keep that in mind, I think it has to be something spiritual. In other words, you have to be given over to something. So I don't think the literal mark of the beast would be just a barcode or something like that.
Or even the RFID chips that are showing up in passports and credit cards and things.
Right. Right. I wouldn't think that would not fit the full description biblically. Now,
it's going to have to be something that, again, that we probably not only beg for, but, you know, really, you know, we explicitly say, you know, we take that on and make that choice.
Right. And it's the goal of that. Everything that Satan does is kind of a reversal and a counterfeit of God. So, because he wants to be God, he wants to be worshipped as God. So, he's trying to counterfeit kind of the omniscience that God has. So, I think he's trying to do that through technology. So, you've got this whole massive technology grid. I was listening to an episode of the Corbett Report recently where he's talking to Greg Nicoletos about the Artelect and all these, you know, the potential for computer technology. And it's this idea of, you know, almost technological omniscience. And I think there's definitely a spiritual agenda behind that. But as far as the Mark of the Beast thing, I think it is something that, Satan through the Antichrist will be attempting to use to cause people to worship. And that's what he craves. I think that's what, whether it's politicians or, you know, these fallen angels, what they crave is people worshiping them. You know, there's some real thing going on there.
And you could kind of argue that, well, there are leaders and technologies that you could say that we worship right now. But also, there have also been generations before us who have said people and false leaders have been worshipped. Again, people thinking they're seeing the end times in their times.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, there's 1800s, there are different groups saying, oh, this date or that date. And I think, you know, if that's all they're hearing from someone who is claiming to be a Christian, I think that would be kind of a red flag, because that's not really the essence of Christianity. It's kind of a fun study, you know, eschatology. It's certainly more interesting than watching TV or something, but it's certainly not at the heart of Christianity.
So. Mm-hmm. So, man, when you're at your church, are there folks who sort of know what you do? I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are, but are there people who are like, oh, he's into that conspiracy stuff?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. I think he'd be okay with me sharing this story, but I gave the book to my pastor, and he read it, and then there were a couple other people in our Bible study that read it, and we were kind of talking to him, and he's kind of, halfway, it's interesting, but he's not really ready to jump on board with the 9/11 thing and things like that. But he called me up a couple days ago. He's like, what's the deal with this oil rig blowing up in the Gulf of Mexico right when they're trying to start drilling there? He said, is that a conspiracy thing? So,
That's what I really enjoy with folks, that when you start to share the information and you start to kind of plant the seeds with them, or even maybe you haven't even gotten that far, they maybe just know that you're a student of these things. When someone comes back to you with something exactly like that, or something, you know, unrelated, I've basically found everybody has their thing that sends up red flags. And when that person sort of, you know, I guess it sounds funny, but when that person admits that thing, it's like, aha, now I know what you're interested in and how I can sort of get you into this information by using stories that are pertinent to things that you're already interested in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
absolutely,
it's like once they come back to you with something of like, so what's the deal with this? Like, I hear there are terror drills, or, you know, I had an aunt that I was visiting with several months ago and I was showing her, you know, the New World Next Week videos and some of the things and some of the stories and talking about current events. But it was only until a little later when she said, well, it was the Oklahoma City thing always kind of, you know, I always had some questions.
Oh,
it was like, boom.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, you know, mental note, you know, Aunt so-and-so, you know, I need to send her OKC truth.
Right, right. So, and in my book, I talk a lot about eugenics, and it's almost everyone now has something, you know, whether they're kind of anti-vaccine, but don't really know how that fits in, or they're, you know, worried about, chemtrails is usually a little more obscure one, but, you know, people are worried about fluoride, or, you know, people that aren't really conspiracy theorists, they just have looked at some research on one of these issues. And what I tried to do is show that, hey, these things aren't accidental and they're not unrelated. All these things tie together. You know, it's a mindset, it's a control grid that's being set up.
You know, and that's something that we really haven't touched on. I guess, you know, I had initially, you know, I wanted to discuss, you know, eschatology and some of the things that we're seeing going down. But that your book is, you know, the New World Order and the Eugenics Wars. And again, the website is eugenicswars.com. That when we come back to, you know, and again, they're essentially our secret families. I think we can, again, all agree on that. Secret families who have seek, you know, control and power for themselves, and eugenics seems to really be their religion. So, briefly, can you go into, you know, some of the things in the book that you go into, the pseudoscience and some of the eugenics wars?
Sure. I think there's this whole idea that people are bad and that we're, you know, ruining the earth. And, you know, in some ways, I mean, there's pollution, there's depleted uranium, there's real environmental crises, but in place of that is put up this whole, you know, carbon dioxide and any human activity is bad. And this is worldwide. This is not just an American thing. When I was teaching over in Korea, I looked up where the readings in the textbook we use came from, and they all come from the United Nations and the CFR and places like that.
Aww.
And it is constantly, I mean, almost every, you cannot get through a single day without global warming being mentioned. And this is like, you know, you would think it is the most important issue ever, you know? And It's just amazing to see that brainwashing. The kids, you know, supposedly are going there to learn English, and they're getting indoctrinated into eugenics. You know, you always got to have a unit on euthanasia and why that's a great thing, and, you know, this and that. And it's definitely a mindset. It's a mindset that the individual exists for the sake of society, and that the goal is to build some huge and wonderful and perfect society. And really, you know, in my opinion, society should exist for the individual. Who cares if you've got some perfectly organized technocracy if everyone's miserable? You know, it should be, and people should have freedom to live their own lives, you know, within whatever society is there. And you can't have that with kind of this technocratic control eugenics grid that's being set up.
Well, and it's like, you know, and it just hit me as you were saying, it's like going out and living in the reservation in Brave New World. Either
Absolutely.
You're going to be in the Brave New World order, where we're all genetically engineered, and there's lots of free sex and drugs, and there's lots of fun stuff to do, but it's a completely regimented society with, you know, the alphas and the betas, and then the lower class epsilon janitors, but you either exist in that world, or you go live out in the desert.
Right, right. And that's, you know, but, I mean, look at the Amish people. There's no group that's less threatening to anyone else. You know, they're just trying to live and do their own thing. And, you know, we've got federal government employees raiding them for selling raw milk. You know, these people, they would just go on living the same way. That's kind of, you know, the reservation model of, hey, we just want to do our own thing, leave us alone. And the system, and I think the forces behind the system can't leave any loose ends. You know, it's just an obsession with control. And
it shows that it can be done in a way where, you know, the powers that be can't have any sort of viable grassroots organization, basically. And when it starts to break out, it either needs to be destroyed or infiltrated or co-opted or any of those things.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, and I've heard you talking on these issues of the new independent media and what the internet has made possible. And, you know, I would like to think, and I do think to a certain extent, that these technocrats didn't see all the implications of the internet coming. You know, they didn't expect people to start getting their news from other places and thinking differently about the world. But I also think there will be attempts made to, you know, start assimilating independent media, whether they're aware of it or not, into the larger system. And I think the whole swine flu thing was one of the first attempts at that. I think there were kind of multiple layers of propaganda there where they were hoping that the alternative media would really push the, hey, this thing was made in a lab, which it probably was, and push the, it's going to kill everyone, because they really wanted, you know, the fear out there of it, which would have helped them push vaccines and work on their systems. I think to some extent it kind of backfired on them, because people, you know, the independent media pushed more of the angle of don't take the vaccines and the virus is a scam. But I definitely think there was an attempt to use the independent media to push the main propaganda message.
Well, and that's, you know, what I find interesting when we see some of, you know, the truther issues get so big with, you know, Jesse Ventura hosting, you know, Larry King, you know, having his own TV show and getting, you know, a huge amount. He is talking about, you know, in his book, American Conspiracies, is a bestseller. But again, it has, just like we were talking about earlier with something different, it's like, if it's that big, is it really still hardcore truth?
Right.
I'm not, you know, I don't spend my time attacking people who are, you know, trying to do good work. I ultimately will just probably not cover it and not spend a bunch of time saying that, you know, that Alex Jones or that so-and-so, and that's not what I'm about at all.
Right, right. And I think lots of times it can be kind of unwitting. At the same time, you can go way too far of the, oh, everything, you know, they had everything planned out and there's nothing we can do that doesn't fit into their system. And, you know, you got to go ahead and act, you know, go ahead and participate in the media, go ahead and participate in politics. But I think it is something to be aware of, that there's constantly an effort to incorporate it into the larger system.
Well, as we start to wrap it up here, and again, man, there's so many things that we could still go over. And again, just to kind of tell folks, you know, the rundown on some of the chapters in the book, you basically give a background on Christianity and good and evil. And then you've got the banksters, the war machine, pseudoscience, eugenics, nanny state, enemy combatants, secret societies, foundation funding, false flag terrorism, the lies of the truth movement, the media matrix, the satanic underground, aliens, possession, oppression, influence, ritual abuse. All those things are, you know, our whole interviews and conversations in and amongst themselves. However, every one of these things is in the news today as we speak. I know I've gone over all of them just as I'm working on posting to the site and in preparation of, you know, Friday's new episode. They're all completely current issues. One big thing I wanted to kind of, you know, this may bring us maybe back around full circle, I suppose, is the story that broke now, you know, going on 3 years ago, but I was, you know, kind of reminded of it in listening to the new documentary, The Rise of FEMA. And it's the clergy response teams. This story came out from KSLA in August of 2007. Clergy response teams to quell unrest during martial law. And for folks who aren't familiar with this, again, we'll provide the link. But it's basically Homeland Security paying off churches to tell their congregation to go along with the New World Order.
Right. And this is all... and it's even FEMA telling pastors what verses from the Bible to preach on. And of course, they want them to preach on Romans 13, which talks about submitting to government. And, you know, obviously, I think that's a horrible thing on several levels. Obviously, I don't want the government messing around with churches at all. I really don't want pastors being sucked into to obeying what the government wants them to do. I think there should have been a huge resistance to that from pastors, and the fact that there wasn't is very kind of disheartening. I think many of them probably mean well and think, oh yeah, I don't want people running around shooting each other during an emergency, and you know, I just want people to be safe. And they probably think that the government has, you know, nice motives for putting people in camps. I don't know how you would think that, but that I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but I think it is sad. Now, those Bible verses, it's important to remember who wrote them. The Apostle Paul wrote those verses, a man who kept getting thrown in jail because he wouldn't do what the government told him to do, which was, hey, man, you got to stop talking about Jesus, you know? Ease up on that. We'll let you go if you stop talking about it. And he would say nope and keep right on doing what he's doing. He also one time he was beaten and thrown in prison, and he told the then the authorities said, okay, you can let him go. And he said, you're not going to let me go. I want to see Caesar. I'm a Roman citizen and you beat me without a trial. So he knew his legal rights in that society and he exercised them. So to say that Christians' role is just to roll over and do whatever the government says, even if it means letting your children get dragged off to a FEMA camp, is a huge distortion, I think. And there's a good analysis of those verses from a guy I really enjoy reading. His name's Jockey Lewell. He wrote a book called Propaganda and a book called The Technological Society back in the 50s and 60s, but he also wrote a book called Anarchy and Christianity. And in that book, he talks about how in Romans 12, it talks about, you know, basically love your neighbor type things, and then love your enemy. And then next in the list, which kind of arbitrarily is shoved into Romans 13, is, you know, submit to the government, obey the government. So his take on it was, you know, they're one step down from enemies is the government, but, you know, you're still supposed to do your best to, you know, live peacefully, and live at peace with your fellow man, even if you're not in agreement with them. It was certainly not a worship the government, everything government does is good type verse.
And it was just something, you know, and it's again a story I feel like has come, you know, I was reminded of it. But again, as we see things going on with, you know, tea parties and homegrown radicals and violence and econo crash and all these things swirling around. To be reminded of some of these stories just, you know, from the last several months or the last several years, so many massive kind of events and movements that I'm like, you know, oh, that's right, I forgot about that one too. So I there's one more I can't resist, and you said you hadn't seen this story, so I'll throw this.
I looked it up.
Oh,
yeah.
You did? Okay. The Lucifer Telescope built next to the Vatican's Arizona Observatory. This, folks, is basically a new instrument with an evil-sounding name helping scientists see how stars are born. And it's called Lucifer, which they get their name as in a huge acronym, which you could have probably pulled out other letters.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, L, you know, L-U-C. And that it's next to the Vatican's observatory, and this is just one of those. What's your take on this?
Yeah, because I think Lucifer literally means, I might get it wrong, but I think morning star or son of the morning or something like that. So, you know, that's the excuse, but there is just kind of this huge agenda going on, you know, and I think it's the kind of 18th and 19th century kind of rationalistic, materialistic point of view is kind of going by the wayside. And I think in some ways that's good, and in some ways, you know, it'll get a little messy. But there's definitely a bigger world out there than what you see on TV or learn about in school. And I think, you know, paying attention to the symbolism of names like that, and, you know, or you've got the Large Hadron Collider and all the issues with that. Some people think that what they're really trying to do there is kind of recreate what in the Bible is described in the Tower of Babel as trying to create a doorway into the second heaven or into the spiritual reality as kind of a gateway for those entities to get through. You know, there's all sorts of intersections between what it was supposedly science and the spiritual. You know, they're not exactly mutually exclusive there. Right?
And these again are the signs that we kind of see really converging with science and spirituality and all the psychological operations being played out on folks.
Yeah.
Andrew Hoffman, the author of The New World Order and the Eugenics Wars, A Christian Perspective. You have eugenicswars.com set up, basically, I believe, as kind of a home for the book.
Right.
As we wrap up here, yeah, tell folks how to get in touch with you. Tell folks, you know, what you're interested in, what you're worried about, what you're watching out for, what, you know, they can do to basically share all this information.
Yeah, that is the best place to get my book. I just put a posting on Amazon as well, but because I don't have to pay Amazon for my website, that's the best place to get it. It's only $10 plus a few bucks for shipping, so I tried to make it as affordable as possible. And I think the feedback I've gotten from people has been really positive. So, you know, if you're out there and you're a conspiracy person, you know, get it, read it, and then you might be trying to get someone who might be a Christian but not into the conspiracy stuff. This would be a good book to give them. So, you can get a hold of me on Facebook. You know, look me up in James's friends there, or however you want to look me up. And I usually post, you know, different articles and things to my page. And yeah, shoot me an email. My email address is andrew@eugenicswars.com, so send me an email there. But I'd like to hear from people. So even, you know, if you want to completely disagree with me, that's fine. We can have a discussion about that. So, great.
And that's I think, what it's all about. And that's, you know, we need to get Christians and atheists and anarchists and Tea Party people and everybody together to basically fight against the real enemies in this world.
Yep.
Man, it was so good to talk to you, and I imagine we're probably going to talk in the not too distant future again. It's good to know that we're actually, you know, so close. And what I'll mention and throw out for everybody, because I think we only mentioned this off mic, is that Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org is actually doing an event here in Portland, a live event called the AC/DC God Show, and he's going to be going into his sort of eschatology and Antichrist studies that Clyde Lewis has. So that may be a chance for you and I to meet up. And again, folks, check out all those sites, and again, all the information will be laid out. Thanks so much, man.
Oh, thank you, James. I really appreciate being on your show.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, you too. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. What if it was true? And oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Tell me, is it true? Did he, die upon that cross? And did he come back across? Jesus walking on the water, sweet Jesus walking in the sky. Think he said, he took my hand, raised me up, and he brought me up. I can hold my head high. Will I be true?
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation, or mail media to the Monarchy, at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.